we're learning a lot more now about how police in California were able to track down Joseph James DeAngelo, the suspected Golden State Killer. And one big piece of the puzzle here is a genetic database not too different from the popular genealogy databases that let people find out about their family origins or relatives. Now, if you haven't used one of these services, you have probably heard some of the ads.
I decided to have my DNA tested through Ancestry DNA.
Getting my 23andMe results,
it really opened my eyes.
The big surprise was we're not German at all.
The more you know about your DNA,
the more you know about yourself.
Now, these services are familiar, but police seem to have come up with a brand new use for genealogy databases. And though catching killers is definitely a good thing, it raises questions about just what information you might be giving away when you send in your DNA. Aaron Murphy is a law professor at NYU and author of Inside the Cell, The Dark Side of Forensic DNA. And she told me exactly how law enforcement used genealogy databases to find Joseph James DeAngelo.
In-house, the forensic laboratory people in California made a profile using what are called SNPs. It's just little pieces of the DNA in every person that gets passed along as you move through inheritance generations. And so they used probably, you know, hundreds of thousands of these SNPs. That's the standard in forensic genealogy. And they made a file that looked a lot like the files you would get if you just sent your material, your genetic material, off to be tested commercially. And then they uploaded that to a website where people share these file results with one another, and the website sort of tells them what the linkages are between people.
So investigators kind of made a patchwork DNA profile of their suspect. They uploaded it. But then what happened next? Because something has to happen on the other end to get a match.
So my understanding, and again, this is just from what I've been reading, and I don't have any inside knowledge, but my understanding is they found at least a relative, it seems like a second cousin or something, and they traced up to a great-great-grandfather, and then they essentially went and mapped out the family tree, trying to use public information to rule out people who probably wouldn't be the suspect because of, say, the wrong age, the wrong gender, the wrong geographic location. So given that, you know, publicly it's been reported that they found a great-great-grandfather, I think it's safe to assume they really fully mapped this tree, trying to find someone in California who would fit the profile that they had of the killer.
So investigators have also said that they used a website called GED Match that's different from 23andMe, from Ancestry, from these commercial DNA testing services that are so very popular. What is that, and how did investigators use it?
That's the site they uploaded the DNA to. So GEDmatch is a site that essentially tries to take advantage of all these different sites and what they offer. So if you want to test at 23andMe and they do their proprietary testing and they'll tell you what they have in their database, you can only get as far as their database. If your relative that you're trying to find happened to test at Ancestry.com and your other relative happened to test at FamilyTree.com or FamilyTreeDNA or some other vendor, you won't cross-communicate. Those vendors aren't looking in each other's databases. So what GEDmatch was an attempt by just two guys, from what I understand, to create an alternative that would allow people to compare across these different vendor platforms. So you could download your raw data from one of the sites that you had used, upload it again to this GEDmatch site, and then GEDmatch created a way for whatever overlapping parts of the genome were looked at to be compared across these different services and kind of amplify the size of the people that you're looking at.
When millions of people signed up for 23andMe or Ancestry, did they necessarily know that there was a third service out there that can cull all of this data and mix it around?
Well, to be clear, the only people who, if you signed up for one of those other sites, then your genetic material would not be on GEDmatch just because you signed up for that site. Those servers are not feeding GEDmatch data. It's only if you then downloaded your data from the site you signed up with and re-uploaded it to this other site that you would be there. But your question really points to something incredibly important, which is that one member in a very extended family tree who says, you know, I don't care about privacy or genetic schmenetics, you know, I just want to know whether I'm related to some celebrity, that person is making a very important decision for not only the rest of their living family members, but really for generations to come, their children, their children's children, and that's to expose their genetic code to the public at large. And I do think that at this time, you know, not only is that a serious decision in terms of law enforcement, but that's going to be a serious decision for other reasons as well. We are really in the earliest stages of understanding the genome. You know, how would you feel if 20 years, 30 years, 40 years from now, the genome gave us indications like, what's the average intelligence of your family line? Are you likely to develop certain diseases insurers might not want to insure? Are you, you know, prone to violence, prone to addiction, prone to mental health issues? There are some people who might say, yeah, I really want to know that information. I want to know it for myself, or I want to know it for my children. But do you want it publicly available for every employer or prospective date or, you know, insurer to be able to look at and know? And I think that's the kind of decision making that worries me. You know, even above law enforcement, this is pretty powerful material. That's why, you know, literally thousands of researchers around the world are trying to unlock the code, the secret to the genome. And just because we haven't fully unlocked it yet doesn't mean that 20 years from now, 30 years from now, we're not going to know a lot more about what our genes say.
So, Professor Murphy, look, I think that there's almost no one who would think that catching D'Angelo isn't a good thing. And a lot of people would say, however you got to get him, go ahead and get him. But overall, do you think this is a positive development, the way police have figured out how to use publicly available databases to catch a killer here?
I don't. You know, I agree with you 100%. And it's really hard to have that internal struggle where you think, you know, the closure for the victims, the justice that's finally being delivered to this person, you know, it's really hard not to find that incredibly appealing and to be thrilled that finally that someone's being held accountable for these crimes. But I do think we need a much more protective set of regulations and laws around the scope of genetic information. I think we're really operating in a no man's land right now. A lot of consumers may not have the expertise to really think forward to what the information they're sharing means. You know, right now, some of these companies, if they were to go bankrupt, they could, in theory, sell their genetic data. We've already seen examples of people contributing to what they believed were anonymous research projects, and then their data, in turn, gets sold to a for-profit company and used for law enforcement purposes. This has already happened, and, you know, someone might say, I thought it was anonymous. I thought it was for, you know, medical research, or I was trying to be a, you know, kind of good member of my community, and now I'm finding out that it's being used for this criminal justice purpose. So I think there needs to be a lot more regulation, a lot more oversight. And I do think this is powerful information that people should be able to access and able to engage in without, you know, worrying about these larger downstream consequences.
Professor Aaron Murphy of NYU, author of Inside the Cell, The Dark Side of Forensic DNA. Aaron Murphy, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
What do you think? Should law enforcement be using genealogy databases to catch criminals, or does it raise too many privacy concerns?
This is Carol Dodson from Tarrytown, New York, and I have no concern at all. If I'm doing DNA testing, I don't care if it goes into a database. I'm not concerned about privacy issues at all if it helps to catch and convict criminals.
Hi, I'm Donna from Kenosha. I've used Ancestry for my family tree and to help determine if an adoptee was related, and she was. She was a first cousin. I'm concerned that my DNA could be used by insurance companies, and this information, in my opinion, should be completely private.
This is Kimo from Pittsburgh. No, I'm not concerned, since I'm not the Golden State Killer. Now, I do not want my DNA used against me to deny me a job, insurance, or anything else, and I don't want it released publicly, but I don't mind if the database of which I'm a part is used by the authorities with proper judicial oversight to find violent criminals.
And we got this from DeSoto, Texas. Gattaca is here. The notion there is any sort of privacy these days is a farce. We pretend to be outraged and shocked at certain events, but continue to willingly give away our private information. What do you think? Talk to us on Facebook. You can always tweet us at The Takeaway. Well, that's it for us today. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm Todd Zwillick. This is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.